Tonight's episode is brought to you by Mixtape Massacre, the board game for the 80s horror fans. Mixtape Massacre is a tabletop board game where up to six players play as horror film archetypes and complete a fictional 1986 killing spree to be remembered. Collect kill tokens and roam the small town of Tall Oaks and stack up your body count, or take each other out of the game in epic brawls. With tons of references to 1980s music, films, and pop culture, Mixtape Massacre will have you laughing while you're slashing. Want more? The Black Mask expansion pack arrives this spring, bringing more gore, slashers, cards, and gameplay. Curated Spotify 1980s playlist is also available. Mixtape Massacre, the board game for 1980s horror fans. Tonight's show is also sponsored by Diabolik DVD. Looking for strange or rare movies? Look no further than www.diabolikdvd.com. They specialize in demented films from all over the world. Coming soon to diabolikdvd.com, the new Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray release of Liquid Sky. They are also currently taking pre-orders on the new Dario Argento Blu-ray releases from Scorpion. Scream Factory, Code Red, Garage House, Arrow, and more. They have all your favorite Blu-ray labels, and you are sure to find something strange and rare that you've never heard of. Head over to www.diabolikdvd.com now. Tonight's episode is also brought to you by Film Bar in Phoenix. Come out and celebrate Women in Horror Month at Phoenix, Arizona's Film Bar. The female filmmakers creating horror today have a unique vision that is breaking new ground and continues the tradition of women in genre films. Right now, Film Bar of Phoenix is showcasing and honoring the works of women with screenings like A Girl Walks Home Alone, Love Witch, and Pet Cemetery. In addition to coming together to commend the female voices of horror, they will be supporting some special nonprofits as well: Planned Parenthood, Fresh Start Women's Foundation, and the Stephanie Rothman Scholarship for Women in Film. Continue to make a difference in the lives of women. $3 from every ticket sold will be donated to these organizations. Unite and make a stand for female empowerment through film. And welcome to Shockwaves tonight. I am your host tonight, Rebecca McKendry, because the guys like wanted to celebrate Valentine's Day or something. it's me. But I have collected together an amazing group to help me with the show tonight. So welcome to Ladies Night. Sitting next to me is Bria Grant.
Hey, guys.
You're like a regular on the show now.
Well, it's because I live so close. I think it's just like the, like, you know, I can't like, if I'm around, I have to walk down
like
the street.
Like, you could be in, like, slippers in the bathroom, and we're like, Bria, just come on down.
Just please come down.
And then we have Sierra, soon to be Turek.
Hi. Aww.
Yes, since Ryan is not here, I brought his fiance, because she's really fucking kick-ass.
Well, I'm a lifelong horror movie fan, so there's that.
Yes, definitely. And then we have Molly Elfman.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
And Molly, you run Fun Size Horror. You're a director. You actually have a feature coming out in very soon.
Yes, actually, in I think it's 9 days.
Yeah.
I think we're actually in the official countdown of single days now. It's called The Party's Just Beginning, and that was directed by Karen Gillan.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Cool. Very excited.
Molly came to talk to my class at USC last semester about producing, and it was just amazing. She is just a well of knowledge.
I think I might have scared some of them.
I think it was awesome. And then we also have Amber Benson, who many people will know from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but she is an amazing filmmaker and also a comic book writer.
Yes, indeed, but not horror comic. Well, yeah. I have written some way back in the past, but now I'm writing Clueless.
That's awesome,
yeah,
though.
Which is not horror.
I can see some of the beats still overlapping, though.
A little bit.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me tonight. So we're going to kick off the way that we kick off every show, and we're going to talk about what we've seen over the past few weeks. So
Don't start with me.
I'm going to kick off because I'm really enthusiastic about the film I watched this week, Ritual, on Netflix.
Oh,
did anybody else watch this?
I watched that.
Okay, so what'd you think?
I didn't think it did anything new.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was reading a lot of really polarizing reviews about it online.
I mean, I liked it, but it didn't do anything new for me.
I was definitely on the side of I loved it. I thought it was tense the entire way through going into it. And I thought the monster was like one of the most creative I've seen in a long time.
No, he looked like, actually, I text Ryan about this as soon as I watched it. Because are you familiar with, God, what's his name? He's this comic book writer, Roman Dirge. So he did this series called Lenorm.
Yeah.
And that creature kind of looks like a combination of two creatures from his comic book series.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I have pictures. I'll show you later.
Oh my gosh. That was by far my favorite thing about the movie. Like, I was in for the tension. Like, I was definitely interested the whole way through. But then the creature showed up and I was like, well, I love this. This is great.
The creature was cool, yeah.
Yeah. It was directed by David Bruckner, who did, he did Signal. He did the VHS series. He by far had the best segment in Southbound. He had the surgery one in Southbound, which was just a crazy, crazy segment.
Really good.
Yeah. So this is actually based off a book. So I now have to go back and read The Ritual book to see what it's like.
Yeah. So are we allowed to swear on here?
Fuck yes you are. I definitely think so. So yeah. So what else did everybody watch this week?
Well, I watched The End of the Fucking World, which is why
before I brought that up.
And I was really, I thought I didn't love the title. I wasn't quite sure. And I saw the pilot and then it totally grew on me.
This is on Netflix too, right?
It's on Netflix. It's a new release. And I was so impressed at the way that they built those characters and how it kind of didn't do exactly what I thought it was going to do. And I don't know. I was really impressed by it. So,
I don't know anything about this one. What's it about?
I saw
some of it. I haven't finished it yet, okay. But I really enjoyed it. There is some definite serial killer-y things going on.
It's kind of like a lighthearted serial killer love story.
Oh, wow.
Between two teenagers.
But there's no apocalypses?
No.
Wow. So it's not the end of the fucking world.
It's the end of the emotional world.
It's a metaphorical world.
Yes.
Got it.
It's every day in the life of a teenager. It's the end of the fucking world.
Yes, exactly. And it's very dark. And at first you're like, is this okay? Is this okay? And then you're like, and it does actually, it's kind of horror in the way that I like to. It actually does have a bigger message about why some of us are into those darker ideas and how we can actually find big metaphors in life and everything else. I don't know. I thought it did a really good job.
Wow.
I was really impressed with it, especially because it didn't seem like it was going to go that deep, and it really kind of hit home by the end.
Hmm.
Yeah, I haven't finished, but I really enjoyed it.
Keep going.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good acting. Good acting.
Wow.
Good kid acting.
Netflix has been doing some, we will argue Cloverfield Paradox, but I've been surprised by some of the Netflix direct releases as of late.
Well, Before I Wake is now on.
Oh, yeah, which was produced by Molly.
There you go. So, it was now on Netflix as well.
And that is just like a fucking terrific movie. Like, I love Before I Wake.
Thank you.
But I'm so glad to finally see it getting some love and attention.
Isn't it exciting?
It took way too long, but it's there.
It took way too long, but it's so exciting to see Jacob Tremblay and butterflies just kind of wandering around on screen. I'm like, that's what it should be.
Totally.
That was good. But Netflix, yeah, they're up and comers, I guess. You know,
I was watching have something. Altered Carbon on Netflix.
Oh God, I love that show. It's so good.
So I'm only a few episodes in though. You guys are probably.
I haven't seen any of it.
Oh, yeah. It's very good. I mean, it's weird. It is very Blade Runner. Like when you watch it, you're like, this is just, it's, some parts are just Blade Runner, but then I think it veered away and it became its own thing. And it's based on a book as well, which I've never read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I liked it. You liked it?
I love it.
I thought it was very good.
And you know, I think it's funny because I feel like how they dropped Cloverfield Paradox kind of took away from the opening of this, of the release of this show.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about this one. Like, I obviously saw Cloverfield in the middle of the Super Bowl, but I didn't hear about Altered Carbon until it popped up on my feed
as
a trending now thing.
Wait, what's the argument here? Who's on what side of the argument?
I did not enjoy Cloverfield Paradox, or more, I didn't enjoy the second half. Like, have we all seen it?
No. I did not watch it.
The first half is really trippy, and you don't know what's going on, and there's a lot of kind of reality-bending moments. And I
dig it.
Loved it. And then as soon as they explained what was going on, it kind of transitioned into more of an action film, and the mystery was gone for me, and then I got really bored.
But
she loved it.
Is this a Cloverfield movie? But didn't you know that was going to be what it's about?
That's what I mean.
I didn't watch the movie, but did you not know it's
aliens? No. It's a prequel, I think.
Yes.
It's a prequel.
It's a prequel, we'll call it. And it kind of brushes on Cloverfield.
Oh.
So
it's not, it's Cloverfield adjacent. It's not necessarily.
It's in the apartment down the hall.
How many spoilers are we talking right now? Just like, okay.
Yeah, they're on the same block. We'll say.
Okay, all right.
But Sierra loved it.
I loved it. But you know, okay, this is coming from someone whose favorite movie is Event Horizon.
I love Event Horizon.
So I'll lead with that. But I thought it took some really cool. It was like a really great application of some real theoretical physics. The whole idea of how Cloverfield really fits into it is that it basically drops the Cloverfield monsters throughout not just dimensions, but time.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, it is a prequel, yes. But it's so good.
Yeah.
That was such a complicated answer that I you just seem really smart to me right now.
And the movie definitely does have a lot of kind of more, I'll call it, egg-heady levels to it, where it gets into a multiverse theory, and this isn't spoilers or anything, but it definitely gets into a lot of physics behind it and multiverse and how time travel works and kind of quantum mechanics of things. It definitely does have that angle. I can see you really enjoying it because Sierra and I both share a Star Trek obsession.
Oh my God. Okay, so seriously, I had to take a break from Star Trek to like catch up on new releases for the podcast because I'm currently watching all of Star Trek in chronological order.
Ooh, wow.
By stardate.
Wow.
That is crazy.
It's gnarly.
How did you chart that?
Now, how do you do like some of the episodes where like it goes, like there was a couple from Deep Space Nine where they actually travel back to the original series?
So what I'm doing is for the ones that overlap, I'm alternating seasons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
That is intense. Are you blogging the whole thing? Because you kind of need to be.
You should be.
You know. Yeah.
Go back to the beginning.
God, no. Oh, my God. No, I can't. I'm currently, like, in the original series, and it's painful.
Is it really?
It's painful.
I tried to rewatch it while I was pregnant, and I wanted to love it just because it is so sacred, and it's canon, and my mom had loved it so much.
It's so sexist.
It's so sexist.
It's so sexist. I get angry when I watch it, and I have to turn it off.
If he says, because you're a woman, it makes me cringe every single time, but that comes up. Like, she seems to be overcome because she's a woman. She's hysterical, clearly, because she's a woman, and...
What's your take on the new series, the new Star Trek series?
Oh, I love it so far.
I haven't actually seen it, but...
I love it.
Amazing. Yeah. All right, good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else do we watch?
Train to Busan.
Oh my gosh.
So good. So good.
Yeah. One of the best films of last year by far.
So
or 2 years
good.
Ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I just you feel, you care. I think that's the problem I have with a lot of horror right now. Is that it's so much about the plot and the monster and the scary stuff and the gore. And we forget that you have to give a shit about the characters because if you don't, there's no point in going on the ride. So you watch that movie and you're like, oh, that's how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to give a shit about the characters. That's good horror.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll name a few new ones, but I just went and rewatched The Orphanage, which I like to do every couple of years just because that's one of my favorite ones because I can't find a better movie where I care about the characters more than that.
I like that because it was a female protagonist and she actually felt real at moments. I haven't seen it since it first came out, though. I need to rewatch.
You should rewatch it. And she does. I mean, she's the reason why the plot moves forward. She's the reason why she feels guilt. She feels shame. But she also is driving everything. And so she's on both sides of it. And therefore, she's really a true character. She's really well-rounded. So really interesting one. And then I just have to – there was two that I saw at the Palm Springs Film Festival, Thoroughbreds and Three Peaks.
Oh, my God. Thoroughbreds murdered me. So good. It's like, I walked into my house and ripped out my throat. It was so good.
Right?
And a first-time director, and it feels like it was based on a play.
But how a first-time director?
It's amazing.
I argued this for so long. It's so well
What's
done.
It about? I know literally nothing about this movie.
go ahead. I mean, it's about two. Go ahead. You brought it up.
It's here, I'll start it and then you can
come
there.
Jump
in. Exactly. I think it's just naturally going to happen. It's about two women. It's about one girl who's kind of the obvious outsider and another girl who's the good girl. And then
from a very rich family, very rich part of the world. I don't know where it's based. Like, it feels like an upstate New York, but I don't really know.
Yeah, and they don't really specify. It could be kind – I don't think they specify.
I'm not sure.
Well, neither one of us remember, so apparently that wasn't important to the plot.
Yeah.
And yet it was very impactful. I don't really want to give anything away, but you find out what is, like, the inner faults within these two women and who is actually the sadistic one and who is actually – what actually makes a sociopath a sociopath? What is empathy? And it just really drives home what the good and bad in each of us is.
How old are they? Is this like high school or
teenagers?
Teenagers.
And that's what's interesting, because I feel like a lot of times teenage girls are written in this way where they're just like over the top and like everything is like they're almost doing vaudeville or something. And like they're very like – they're very grounded, but obviously like playing these sort of archetypes that – of the good girl and the weirdo or whatever. But it's just, they're just so good. It's so well directed. Anton Yelchin's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was one of his last movies.
I do. Yeah, I think it was.
And the direction is amazing. And it feels like you're watching a play, but a play that sort of is obviously a movie, which is not a play at all.
Well said. No.
It was a haiku.
Yeah, no, exactly. I couldn't agree more. And then Three Peaks, which was another first-time director. And it was one of those films that almost nothing is happening, but if you take your eyes off the screen for a second, you've missed such an important piece of the plot. And you're just like, and it's this tiny little, oh my God, I can't believe he looked like that. He looked like that. That's going to be this huge thing. And it's just every single beat, everything was so intentional. Everything was purposeful. And I did not see it coming, which is just so rare, because I feel like we outsmart films all the time where I'm like, oh, okay, okay. And I was like, and I was literally, when the film like stopped, I actually went, wow. Like, and it was just because it was surprised me that I actually felt some of those feelings that I just never actually get to. And it was about, quite frankly, a male character, which I normally don't side with that often. And I actually felt all these, it was very, very well done. And so, yeah, both those films, two male directors, which is normally not the thing that I'm highlighting, but, you know, two really good films with strong female roles in both of them.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you guys, are you guys fans of Channel Zero, which has been running on Sci-Fi Network? I have been totally in love with it so far. They did the first two seasons, which we've talked a ton about on Shockwaves, where they did, what was the name of the first one? It was the Haunted Kids show, and then they did No End House.
Oh, it was called,
yeah, it's like right there. It's like right there.
So close.
Yeah, so they did the Haunted Kids show, and then they did No End House, and they just this week premiered the new season, The Butcher's Block, and it scared the crap out of me. I watched it last night, and I literally afterwards I turned to my husband and I was like, I need to watch like a Rick and Morty or something to like let my brain decompact a bit before bedtime. Like, it was just and they're all like that. They're all like, I have problems binge watching Channel Zero just because they're all so compact and there's so much horror and it's really trippy stuff, and it's all really heady. But this one in particular, it's about a girl who heads into an inner city and she's hoping to become kind of a social therapist, and she's really there to help people. But when she gets there, she discovers that people in this one section of town are disappearing at a really high rate. There's this like really creepy park next door that everybody keeps telling her never to go near. There's a strange number of crazy people meandering, and all of this weird graffiti about this character called the Butcher. And yeah, it's really good.
That was a good sell.
Yeah.
I was like, and then what happens?
It's really good. So I'm super excited for other people to check it out. So I highly recommend checking out Butcher's Block. And if you have, you can watch it, I think, on the Sci-Fi website right now as well. Like the first episode is on there too.
Nice.
So yeah, definitely check it out. Anybody else see anything?
Oh, yes. The long-awaited review of Beyond the Seventh Door.
Oh my gosh. So Rob gave us a little bit of this screening that you guys did together, and all I got out of it was that it's completely fucking batshit crazy. So tell us about this
movie. It is so batshit crazy. Okay, so we tried to do a double feature of Beyond the Seventh Door and Things.
Oh my gosh.
This was I'd seen Beyond the Seventh Door before, and I loved it. And I made Rob promise not to watch it without me, because you kind of need a friend through it. Like, watching the movie alone.
This movie is put out by Intervision, and that's a subsection of Severin's releasing label. Like, and this is where they put the video, really weird shit that they don't know what to, like, it's not like anything else. So, yeah.
So, I love escape rooms. And and this was like, it was like the movie The Room meets an escape room, right? So, you have the lead actor who looks like, what's his face?
Tommy was.
Yes.
Tommy
was. Yes. He looks just like him, but he's, you know, very clearly like this, like, you, he's just the weirdest face. Like, I don't even understand it.
I googled like, him when Rob was on, and I oh must God, concur.
No, he has a very strange face.
Yeah. No, it's yeah. it's something. Can and we do- and so basically, it's like him and his and his. He gets out of jail, and his ex-girlfriend meets him like at this coffee shop, and they're trying to work out like one more hustle because he's a thief. And so they go to this mansion.
Not like the hustle. Like,
yeah. So they go to this mansion where she now lives with some creeper in a wheelchair. And they
all
go.
All tracking. Stories yeah, yeah. all tracking.
So they go and they try to steal the fortune, and they end up in like an escape room. And they have to find their way out. And it's
or,
great.
Or
there's
like
a great
people
twist
under
at the
stairs
end.
Kind of thing. Like, okay, yeah. like you
I
know.
See I see it. I yeah. see the Tommy.
He's very Tommy.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's so. Yeah. He's okay.
Does
really
he have
very
the accent?
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. He's very.
What year is this movie? It's
Lord,
like.
Lord, I don't. Know.
I hold on.
It's not recent. We're talking about.
No,
a movie
no,
from
no.
Like
this
the,
is like, yeah.
Okay. This is 1980s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Canadian movie.
Gotcha.
Yeah. yeah.
But I did do a really great escape room over the weekend.
Tell me more about it. Have I heard of this escape room?
Yeah, you demoed it, I think,
yeah,
right?
We have, yes. some, yeah. we have some escape room enthusiasts in the room. Yeah. And so I've only done a couple around LA, but Sierra, you've done like most of them.
Yeah, so
what?
Many.
There's like so many in
There's
LA.
So, yeah, I've done so many. But this one was really fantastic. It's called Stash House. And
Yeah, we both.
Did you love it?
I did. I loved love it. I loved it. I thought it was one of the most satisfying, too. It was one of the most irritating as I was doing it. And then, like, it had those, you just had that yeah. satisfaction.
Oh, yeah.
It was but really good.
It was designed really, really well in the sense that there was no bottlenecking.
Nope.
Like, multiple people had multiple things to do at the same time.
Mm. Oh, that's good. So, that's always my good. Issue yeah. is, like, if there's only one key to find to advance you to the next area, one person finds that key. Yeah. And then one person gets to go put the code in the computer and so on.
No, it's a good one. You actually have to divide. And you can divide in teams if you want to. It's actually a good one to bring a good amount. I would say 5 to 7 is, like, don't go with too few people. And it was just really smart. It was really clever. Everything added up. Everything worked.
Yeah.
Also,
no, it was
way,
great.
You know,
everything
like,
worked.
It's not always the case. Yeah. So I've actually been locked in escape rooms where I'm like, are we actually, we're locked in now.
No. One of the last ones I did, we actually had to stop the game because there was like a sewage pipe leak.
Oh,
in the room.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, is this supposed to be, is there, there's water on the floor. Like, is this okay? And they're like, oh, crap. No.
They're like, is this part of it? Plug up the sewer line. It's a little too immersive.
I did one last year where one of the clues we got was like, enter this code onto the computer. And then there's this computer console over. And then we walked over and started entering the code into the computer, but we couldn't get the computer to come on. So out of nowhere, this guy bursts through the locked door and he goes, I'm here to torture you. And then he literally goes over, restarts the computer, and he goes, I'm done. And then he walks back out. So we're like, oh, I guess the computer was broke.
Yeah. Stash House was pretty great.
It was. Very then, smart.
What's
yeah,
the setup? Smart. What's
what
the
is it?
Story
is it
behind it?
Mustaches?
No, it's like
I love that. That's where your brain
that's
went.
Really
is
what
mustaches.
I, think.
Oh, I was thinking. Yeah, I was thinking drugs.
There you go.
But
drugs.
Mustache
yeah, drugs.
Works as well.
I don't know.
It's a mustache factory. You got to match the base to the mustache and like which mustache did it.
It's just a house full of hipsters. They open up the door and they hand you a mason jar full of beer.
Yeah. No, it's a drug house. And
yeah, it's a drug house.
And they do a really good job of. I was very surprised at the start. That it's very fun at immersing you into the space, and it kept and a bunch of very fun surprises. I found
yeah.
very
very fun surprises.
Yeah,
is this
well
one
designed.
Fully up and running in Los Angeles
yep.
now?
It
it's
is.
Out of beta.
Yep. It's all ready to go.
Man, we have so many here right now.
It's
I can't
crazy.
Even keep up.
So many.
We've got one in North Hollywood that just opened up on Vineland. That have you done this
what?
One yet? Yeah, and it just it's a black and white building, and outside it just says escape room, and then underneath it says Egyptian themed.
No, no,
don't
fuck
go
no.
into that room.
I'm anxious to see what becomes of it.
Yeah,
so.
That's a fuck no for me.
So what's the best one you've tried?
I really like, so Stash House was really, like, I mean, it was up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really like The Basement. Basement's
oh,
really fun.
The basement yeah. was the basement? Great. Yeah. That's the one where it's a cannibal and he's locked you in.
Yes.
And yeah. the setup for these is great. I liked the basement because there was stuff hidden around the room that you had to find. Mm-hmm. And you had to be a little bit daring. Like there's a scene where you have to stick your hand in something kind of gross to get yeah. to proceed past it. And yeah, I liked that one. I didn't solve it on the first one, but then the second time we went back, we solved it nice. Pretty quickly.
So. Oh, and what was a hex room?
I was about to say, I think my two favorite, well, Stash, by the way, probably in the top five for sure. Oh, yeah. I would say my two favorite are, I think Hex has got to be one of the, I think Hex is still, I had so much fun. You know, I was the jock, which, by the way.
Oh, I was too. I love
it. What's Hex room? The one where you become, where you're like the different characters from the Breakfast Club kind of thing?
Well.
am I simplifying it too much?
A little bit. Well, you're a horror cliche. And you're all horror cliche. So basically you get to fill out a form, which is really fun because they decide which trope you are. And then you get put into a different room and then you realize that you are in a different horror film. So we both realized. I don't know. Did we reveal which room we were in?
I don't remember. I beta tested it, so it was like before.
Okay, so that was I was in the Hannibal room, but like there was like there's all these different rooms that you suddenly realize that you're in that movie, and now you have to individually escape from your own room and then collectively escape a joint room.
So cool.
And so that was a really fun experience, and for the more expert. And then while down there, if you're gonna go to Hex, go to the Cromwell Estates. Which
what
is, really
is Cromwell? Oh my gosh.
Cromwell begins when you have to break into a house.
Wow.
But then, I haven't done that one yet.
It's really good.
That's exciting. Cool.
But then something's gone wrong. And then just go from there. But it's really, I would say, and they're right next to each other, but I would say that that's one of, definitely in the top five as well.
That's great. I wonder, because there's so many here in L.A. I think that this, I was questioning if this trend had spread out across America yet.
It has.
And then I found
other countries as well, right?
I've done one in Prague. I've done them in London, Scotland. Wow. I've done them, yeah. Prague, by the way, somebody actually got hit in the face with a grappling hook. So make sure that you yelp them if you're out of the country.
Oh, my gosh.
A real medieval grappling hook. Nikki Kraft, that's for you.
Wow. Yeah.
That is crazy. Oh, my gosh.
Sorry about that.
They opened up one in, like, my tiny, tiny little hometown. So then I was suddenly like, okay, yeah, this is a thing
now. No, it's a thing.
Mm. Amber, do you do escape rooms?
Not well.
You're the person That's in the corner being like, well, I'll just read the book.
I feel really old. I was like, oh, it's a thing you do, and you go in there, and then you have to leave your house. Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, that's a good idea when an escape room comes to you. Like, this is the, like, you order an escape room to yourself.
It's so just, it shows up like a dog wash or something. Mm-hmm.
I love it. The van out front.
And then they take your house over. Oh, that's great.
The mobile escape room. We're starting it.
That's great.
Yeah. Anybody see anything else this week? Sierra, I see you
have
a list.
Yeah, I have two more kind of out of left field.
Let's hear it.
But they're two foreign witch movies.
Oh, nice.
So the first one is a Filipino film called Puera Usog, which translates to Evil Eye Hex.
I have never heard of this. So you're going to have to start by saying where you found it.
So it's on Amazon Prime, and there are subtitles. And it wasn't great. But
are Philippine witches the same? Like, how does the concept of a witch translate?
Yeah, kind of the same-ish, but like, you know.
I would say Catholicism probably
kind of plays a part in that too. And so it's kind of the same, but I have some really great notes on the movie.
So this is Evil Eye Hex.
And this is for the filmmakers out there?
Bratty teens, prank gone wrong. Two witches, one good, one bad. Bad one eats kids or bathes in blood? I don't remember. Jug of saliva, vomit, possession, more saliva, the further?
And that's the movie.
You didn't
shrug
my shoulders.
I feel like I don't have to see it now. Now I feel like I've seen it.
I really think that should have been on the box cover. Because somewhere in there I would have been like, jug of saliva.
Wow. It's really crazy. But I think you'd have to like really, to enjoy it, you'd have to like go and Google like Filipino customs. And because, I mean, I'm Filipino and so I get it. But if you just want to watch a weird movie where people get like slathered in saliva.
That's a thing. Yeah. That's a thing. Okay, we'll go with that.
People and then, are into all things.
Wow.
All the things.
That's cray.
And then the second one is, my pronunciation is going to be terrible. It's Santo en Atacan las Brujas, The Witch's Attack. And this is a Santo movie. And apparently there's this like Mexican wrestler named Santo.
He's very famous.
Right. Yeah. I'm just now figuring this out. And I fucking love it.
Yeah, there's so, so many good Santos.
There's 52 of them. 52
and what is he Santo doing? Movies. He taxes people. What does he do?
He's
the muscle, and he's the good guy.
He's
usually.
The good guy.
He's the good guy.
Yeah.
And like other people are getting beat up, and he saves them.
Yeah,
yeah.
In a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is very complicated.
Well, there was a whole line of kind of horror wrestling crossover movies that came out of Mexico during the 60s and 70s. And so they're still going on. Like, we still see a couple of them come out now, even the Mil Máscara movies. There's like, this is a whole subgenre.
I feel like
subgenre.
The American Wrestling Federation, is it the Federation still? They tried to do that.
Entertainment
Thank
now.
Thank you, you're right.
Because the pandas got pissed and sued them.
Right, right. Yeah. So, but they did that for a hot minute too, or maybe they still are. They're
doing WWE is still pretty engaged in horror in general. They're doing more of like a distribution thing now. But yeah, there was a stretch where they were putting like Kane in horror movies and things
like that.
Reminds
me of Low Life. There's really good.
Oh yeah.
Wrestling that shows up in that one.
It's a really sweet movie.
Yeah. So in this one, was he a good guy or is he a bad guy?
Well, he's always the good guy.
He's always the
good guy.
Great, great, great.
And I'm going to go on a mission to like watch all 52 of these movies because they were great.
You better blog that. Blog that.
It's like watch this man do really ordinary feats of strength. Like scale a wall when you could use the door
with a really cool mask on.
And then like the bonus features had this like reel of like little snippets from all the Santo movies. And my favorite one is where he like peels off his mask to like reveal another mask. It was so good.
That's a
I was like, I'm sold. That's it. I'm watching all of them.
I've seen that in a meme somewhere. I know that one. Yeah, that's
great. Are the movies like full length movies?
Oh yeah,
52
these
full-length?
Are full features.
Guys, my eyes have been opened.
This is the whole subgenre. The Santos films. Okay. They've been going on forever.
It's Brig, you're not alone because I'm just now figuring this out too.
Okay, it's crazy. Wow.
You gotta watch them all by star date though.
You got me there.
Totally. So that one, since he's battling a witch, did the witch, like, was it still the same or was it kind of a different version?
He was battling, like, a coven of witches who were trying to find sacrifices to their dark lord of shadows or something like that.
Like you do.
Lord of shadows, like you do. And he just, like, whoops their asses.
Nice.
Like multiple times. And then there's just like this random wrestling match. Like, you know, because he's not only like, you know, this PI for hire and like light of all good, but he's also like, you know, a wrestler. He's got to do his luchador.
Which is like his main job. Which is his main like gig. Like he is, they're equally important to him.
It seemed like it, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wrestler first, I would say.
Wrestler first, PI second.
PI second.
For supernatural entities.
Yeah. But like, no, there's like a werewolf one. Mm-hmm. There's like a vampires one. There's a robot, I think, like from what it seems like.
Very Abbott Costello to me.
There's because a mask situation.
They are all very self-aware. Like they all kind of, and you mentioned the mask and seeing another mask underneath. So they all kind of had this self-awareness of kind of how over the top and even silly they are at times. And then these films, the Santos films and the popularity of them spawned kind of all of these wrestling horror knockoffs that came out. Like there's Wrestling Women versus the Aztec Mummies.
I heard about this one,
which is hilarious. And but there was like a whole subsector of wrestling horror films that came out based on that.
Wow.
So,
guys.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Good to know.
You learn something new every day.
Well, thanks, guys. We will be back in just a second. And today we are going to be discussing witch films. So we're going to hear a word from our sponsors and we'll be back in just a sec. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Mixtape Massacre, the board game for the 80s horror fans. Mixtape Massacre is a tabletop board game where up to 6 players play as horror film archetypes and complete a fictional 1986 killing spree to be remembered. Collect kill tokens and roam the small town of Tall Oaks and stack up your body count, or take each other out of the game in epic brawls. With tons of references to 1980s music, films, and pop culture, Mixtape Massacre will have you laughing while you're slashing. Want more? The Black Mask expansion pack arrives this spring, bringing more gore, slashers, cards, and gameplay. Curated Spotify 1980s playlist is also available. Mixtape Massacre, the board game for 1980s horror fans.
Tonight's show is also sponsored by Diabolik DVD. Looking for strange or rare movies? Look no further than www.diabolikdvd.com. They specialize in demented films from all over the world. Coming soon to diabolikdvd.com, the new Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray release of Liquid Sky. They are also currently taking pre-orders on the new Dario Argento Blu-ray releases from Scorpion. Scream Factory, Code Red, Garage House, Arrow, and more. They have all your favorite Blu-ray labels, and you are sure to find something strange and rare that you've never heard of. Head over to www.diabolikdvd.com now. Tonight's episode is also brought to you by Film Bar in Phoenix. Come out and celebrate Women in Horror Month at Phoenix, Arizona's Film Bar. The female filmmakers creating horror today have a unique vision that is breaking new ground and continues the tradition of women in genre films. Right now, Film Bar of Phoenix is showcasing and honoring the works of women with screenings like A Girl Walks Home Alone, Love Witch, and Pet Cemetery. In addition to coming together to commend the female voices of horror, they will be supporting some special nonprofits as well. Planned Parenthood, Fresh Start Women's Foundation, and the Stephanie Rothman Scholarship for Women in Film continue to make a difference in the lives of women. $3 from every ticket sold will be donated to these organizations. Unite and make a stand for female empowerment through film. So much. And we are back for a topic that we did back during our Killer POV days. We actually discussed the TV show Salem and kind of talked about witch films with that. But it's a topic that I have always felt is just kind of sorely underrepresented in horror across the board is witch films. They somehow get swept under the rug a lot. So I am excited today to talk about witch films, kind of where they came from, the origins of kind of the witch in cinema, and where it's headed, and some awesome films that we can recommend for it. So I'm going to start with the question. Did you guys like witches when you were a kid?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked one, I thought.
Yeah, so did I. Did you guys used to do that?
I swore I was a Sanderson.
Oh my gosh.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to stand outside, and my parents had, we lived up on this hill. They still do. My parents have been in the same house forever. And we lived up on this hill, and it was always really windy up there. And I used to stand out on the porch, and I swore I had the power to control the wind. Because I would, and I mean, it was just windy all the fucking time. I know that now. But I would stand out there, and I'd be like, wind, come. And then the wind would blow and I'd be like, I know I have powers.
I was super convinced I could talk to animals too. So we're here. Like, I got like, I was like, animals can understand me.
And you do. And
did you guys go as witches for Halloween?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Every
year.
Wow.
For like 8 years.
I was Medusa one year. I remember that.
Witchy.
It was witchy.
We'll call that witchy. My daughter's been a witch for the past 3 years. And every year I'm like, do you want to go with something else this year? And she's like, no, mommy, I'm a witch. And so I want to start with why witches are so attractive for little girls. Because when I was a kid, witches weren't scary to me exactly. They were more like alluring. It was more like something I was longing to be.
I feel like, the difference between witches when we were little girls versus now, they've had a little bit of a comeback in the last couple of years, it seems like, as like a better, more positive thing because of like the Harry Potters of the world kind of stuff. So like because you have all these magicians, I mean, I could be totally wrong about this, but it seems like that's like recently we have more like positive sort of style.
And even in the kids' world, there's a lot more witch TV shows now than I think there were over the past, I'll say, prior decade, because The Worst Witch is now a TV show on Netflix. There's Little Witch Academy that my daughter watches all the time. Super Monsters is on Netflix and has a witch as the main character. We've had Monster High. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's been a couple of like really witch positive things.
Witch positive.
Witch. You're so witch.
But when I was a kid, this movie that really stuck with me, I must have been in early elementary school, was The Witches.
Oh, yeah.
And that really scared me when I was young. And I remember being scared of witches. So I don't think I dressed up as a witch. I was more dressing up as like unicorns and like shit like that. And one year a pirate. I definitely remember dressing as a pirate. But that movie, The Witches, really like put the fear of witch in me. You know, where I was like, these ladies are going to come around and turn me into a little mouse mm-hmm. that looks real creepy. Do you remember this mouse?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That Focus mouse Focus. Was creepy as
horrible,
shit.
Yeah. Horrible.
And the witches in general was scary because those were like scary fucking witches because they took their hair off yeah. and everything.
Melted. Great. And yeah. then I loved The Wizard of Oz when I was a kid and obviously has a good witch and a bad witch. But I thought more about that bad witch. She was mm-hmm. real scary and obviously like supposed to be very ugly. And not nice, you know? There's this, like, whole thing where they're, like, kind of, like, not attractive. When I was a kid.
Yeah.
But obviously you guys disagree. You dressed up as witches. You loved them.
I think there's just something about magic that's very appealing, especially when you're a young girl and you kind of feel like, oh, the boys do those things, but I'm not allowed to do the same things as the boys, or I can't run and play with it. So I have magic, and I can do all this other crazy stuff that's way cooler than anything the boys are doing. And it was kind of, I think it was kooky and spooky for me. I mean, I remember in elementary school, a song, you know, dead leaves, seaweed, apple cores.
Rotten
too.
Eggs to yeah, yeah, yeah. stir
them in my witch's brew.
Yeah.
I got magic. Yeah. And then there were books like Dorothy and the Dreamyard Witches. And then Witch Week, which was, my brain isn't working because I'm getting old and tired. And like all these amazing, like, witch sort of books that I think were very appealing because you had powers, you know? Yeah.
Which is very appealing.
Yeah, I think it had to do with, and I don't know, maybe this was the environment that I was growing up in, but scary thing, I'm using air quotes right now, which you can't see, but scary things weren't necessarily meant to be scary, and I think that they were actually meant to be embraced and understood, so I was always very curious. And the thing about witches was there was so much to be curious about, and there was kind of, I mean, they are magical, they are our spells, and it is powerful. And I think even from a very young age, the idea of being empowered and actually being able to make your wildest fantasies come true in good ways, hopefully, because I'm, you know, not necessarily always putting negative spins on it, but mm-hmm. you could be a good witch or a bad witch. Mm-hmm. What type of person are you? But I think I was always inclined towards being curious towards spooky things, and so that's hence me being Medusa, I think, was, you know, what I was drawn to.
Do you have fake snakes in your hair? Like, how'd you do that?
Actually, This is my dad actually made my Medusa like helmet, and it was, I think, like 70 plastic snakes
what?
That he sewed in, and it took him days in his hand. Like, oh, this God. Is like, this was a thing
Good
that was
dad.
In my
wow.
hand. And he actually did that. So yeah,
Good
well
dad.
Done. And then I think the dog ate it.
Oh my gosh.
It was like a giant, awesome, squeaky toy.
That could have been, you know, that could have been like one of the ultimate, like, Danny Elfman collectible things that would have ended up on eBay, and instead it just, yeah.
Instead it's just gone. But I don't even know that we took photos. That was the other thing, by the way. We never took photos. Like, I have a couple of photos of these things, and it's like, now there's 50 million photos. Like, I'm sure when your daughter, when you dress up, I've seen her on Instagram.
Yeah, she's all over. Like, literally, I warn people. I'm like, if you follow me on Instagram, it's like occasional horror stuff, like a third horror, and mostly my kids.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. But it's cute kids. It's fun.
I would love to have some more photos of this stuff. And I was also the Man in Black. I got obsessed with wow. Princess Bride, and then
wow.
wanting to be
him. You didn't want to be Winifred. You wanted to be the Man in Black.
Oh, you were such a cool kid.
I just, like, was, I don't know. So I didn't really have that issue.
Or Buttercup, sorry, Winifred.
Buttercup. I didn't want to be, but no, also my friend was Buttercup. I don't know, she was the princess. I was never the princess. I still am not the princess.
Crazy. So you were a witch for like 8 years in a row.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I've always been drawn to the darkness. Like, I don't, there's like, you know, I grew up, I was like the goth kid. Still kind of the goth kid. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it had that appeal to me, you know, that mystery, that kind of like that darkness, that like, ooh, that's something different. And I guess that's always been a part of my personality. So that's what drew me in.
Now, did you guys do, I don't even know what to call these things. I'll call them like conjuring light, which for the longest time, I assumed that every kid at like age 8 played light as a feather, stiff as a board. And then I discovered this is only a female thing.
Yeah.
Like, guys did not do this at their sleepovers.
How silly. Because they could have floated in the air. Like,
I know, right?
Because that happened, right?
And did you guys play the Midnight Man? Am I the only one who did
no,
that?
No, Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary.
I still can't do Bloody Mary.
It's really scary.
It's still petrifies me.
It's too scary.
it's still too much for me.
And Ouija boards.
Okay, we're doing that right after the show. We're going to the bathroom.
In the Blumhouse bathroom, we are conjuring Bloody Mary.
If Bloody Mary is living somewhere, it's in the women's bathroom at Blumhouse. Like, that is definitely where she's living.
I hope she's not.
But light as a feather, stiff as a board, and the Midnight Man, and you mentioned Ouija boards. Like, we always, like, it wasn't a slumber party unless we had the Ouija board. And I even remember doing the game where it's just a candle and you ask the candle yes or no questions, and if the flame shoots up, it's yes, and if it goes down, it's no. And these, I'll call them like conjuring witchcraft light games, I think are kind of a coming of age for most females. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't, my mom was like really into this stuff. Like, we had like books and like there's all kinds of shit. But when my grandfather passed away, my aunt and my mom, they played, I guess, a Ouija board, the Filipino version of it being Spirit of the Glass.
Is it an actual like shot glass that?
Yeah,
goes
it's like
on it?
they use like a crystal glass, and there's like a, I forgot how it goes, but like some really spooky shit went down, and I did not sleep that night. And ever since then, there are no Ouija boards allowed in my house. Like, that's actually for real.
Yeah,
thing.
I had the same thing. And by the way, you keep saying eight, and I was like, or like 18.
No, because like definitely, I was still 16 fucking around with the Ouija board.
But I grew up in a haunted house, so like notoriously haunted house in Topanga Canyon, in which there was a murder before we moved in, and nobody would move in because they kept getting haunted. And before we moved out, we actually brought out the Ouija board. And we actually did the whole circle of light, and there was we called the four corners, and we did the whole thing.
Was
this
like a family event?
No, I got my girlfriends.
Okay,
my family, my mom. I don't remember where she was. probably would not have approved, or was probably like, just do it. And so we called the corners. We did the whole thing, and I'll never forget. Every single light and every single candle went out.
Oh, that's too scary. God.
And we all got up and screamed and ran out. And then we did go back and we did ask questions, and we did actually find a note that was buried in a garage. And there was a whole long story that I won't go into. But ever since then, I still play with light. So for instance, whenever somebody passes away, I actually buy a candle that reminds me of them in some way. And whenever I miss them, I light that candle and I talk to it. So the idea of that being gone is, I mean, I that's not gone for me at all.
Yeah, I gave up. So when I think I was like 16 or 17, I tried to like do a love spell on Trent Reznor.
And then it didn't work.
And when it didn't work, I was like, fuck this shit. But you know what? Actually,
know
he married a Filipino. So maybe I was just off by a little bit.
You were channeling
He was looking for you. He couldn't find you. He found the next best thing.
I got Ryan.
It's just like, get closer. Closer.
I did better.
I used to read witchcraft books. And I always thought that this was weird. So like, I never told anybody, but I would go to the library and check out all these witchcraft books and read them. So like, how to do. And I remember almost being kind of, I don't want to say bored by it because it was still really kick-ass reading. But when I found that a lot of it's just meditation, I was kind of like, oh, this is not quite the, you know, put hexes on everybody.
Yeah, you
I was
read
picturing.
Like Starhawk and that kind of stuff, and it is very ritual, but it's not like spells per se.
Yeah, the stuff that I was reading, and it was very much like, you know, find a quiet place and sit on your yoga mat, and now think about what you really want in life and reflect on that and really relax. And I was like, well, I wasn't quite, you know, I wanted potions that were going to make me rich and all that stuff. So
I still want that.
I know.
I still want potions that are going to make me rich or whatever.
Yeah, I still want to be able to, like, change your look or do whatever you want or, like,
oh,
fly.
The Craft.
I know. I rewatched The Craft because I got
so
excited.
Good.
I know. And that was a huge, like, changeover because there's the kid, you with the witches. And then I think I was, like, a teenager. And, oh, man. And
you got like sexy girls in like short skirts, like walking around being badasses.
They're
that
fixing
shit was
their
rad.
Problems. They had really great hair.
But they were still outcasts, which was cool. They weren't like the cool girls.
No, they weren't.
They were the outcasts, which made them better.
I felt like all of those girls combined.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, I was like, I'm all of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they were all kind of like different, but they had their own issues. And then I always felt like the outcast where I grew up. And so watching movies like that was just like, that was the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And it was there was actually a lot of empowerment. And eventually you have to go within yourself and all the rest of it. But I was like, this holds up. couple of things definitely don't. There's a couple of moments I'm like, oh boy, you don't do that anymore. But for the most part, it really held up. And I was like, wow, this is a major turning point. Why was Skeet Ulrich, why is he so evil looking? I was just like, he's just like, every single time he looks at the camera, I'm like, huh. I'm sure he's a sweet, I don't know him at all. I'm sorry.
Didn't he play a bad guy in a Scream movie?
Yeah.
Yes, the bad guy in Scream.
That's stuck in your head.
I think it is. I'm like, he's going to turn on you.
Yeah, you know where that's headed.
Yeah, do not date him.
That was a spoiler, but I'm just going to assume that most of the people listening to the show by now have seen Scream. I think we can talk about that one. So.
That's pretty broad.
Do you have a no spoiler rule on this show?
No. Sometimes we're like, if it's The Shining, we're just going to assume you've seen The Shining if you're listening to Shockwave.
Danny does what? Yeah.
But with The Craft, it was totally empowering for me in high school. I remember watching that thing in repetition, and it was powerful women who were the outcasts, and they were finding themselves through witchcraft. I remember trying the pencil trick, like literally sitting in history class and going, oh, didn't work that time. Oh, didn't work that time. And just being like, it's going to work one of these times. But yeah, it was life-changing for me.
And like Thoroughbreds, that movie has a lot about basically the cruelty of young girls to other girls.
Yeah.
Where girls can just be really fucking mean to each other. We all know, we grew up, they were just mean girls, and those girls could be really mean. And that's like an interesting thing that I think isn't explored that much in film.
And the nuances of it. It's not always the obvious ways. Sometimes it's the unobvious ways. It's the deep under your skin ways. And you're like, why did you do that? That's just like horrible. And it's, that's the truth.
It's all there.
It was all there. It was really good. And then she can do magic.
In high school, I was also, I'll call it my formative years, I was really empowered by Buffy as well, and their portrayal of witchcraft and how it was not.
Oh, shit, that's right. I played a witch. I forgot.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you talking about that? And then I was like, oh, because that, okay.
You guys were witches.
You entrenched yourself with that and your books.
I forgot. It's like high school. I forget. I'm like, oh, I did that. Like, oh, that happened. You forget these things in your life as you get older.
But the witches on Buffy.
Are you like 157?
I feel like it. I turned 41 and everything. I just was like, oh, what happened? What happened to me? I get up in the morning and things hurt.
I had this discussion with my husband a few days ago where I'm suddenly like, my hip hurts. And I have a feeling if I was to go to the doctor for it, that he would just be like, yep, it's going to do that. And then that's it.
Yep,
that's
all
you got.
Suck it up.
So when I was kind of entering high school and college, like the witches on Buffy were amazing for me. Because
it was a string. I've actually had people come up and like ask, like, how did you do that?
Oh, really?
I think there's such an interesting line between reality and fiction when it comes to this kind of stuff, because we talk about The Craft and how appealing it was and how everyone's trying to do all this magic stuff.
Yep.
There's a reality that's kind of underneath all this like fantasy stuff that we make up.
Well, especially with characters on shows like that are serialized and you watch every single week, and that was on for a really long time. So by the end, I was like, well, I guess I'm best friends with all these people, and also I'm a witch. You just start to like sort of believe you live in this world.
It's totally true. Yeah, I get it.
You are in The Craft.
So when you were doing the show, was the response, like, were you finding people who were really empowered by it and, you know, really connected with it?
Yeah, I think definitely with the magic stuff. I mean, and they go off on a whole other tangent of, like, the fact that magic was, like, sort of a euphemism for sex.
Completely.
Which is kind of interesting when you talk about magic and puberty and girls going through these changes and becoming a woman and inheriting the power that comes with being like a powerful female. I mean, that's a whole other tie with this stuff.
And that even goes back to like theories of like the origins of why women were always accused of witchcraft. It was never like, oh, well, all of you guys are witches. It was always just, oh, these chicks over here are witches. And it was supposed to be like a fear of sexuality, fear that they could be doing something sinister that can't be controlled.
There's probably were.
No doubt.
There's a real power with owning your sexuality, and, you know, you're the gatekeeper. And there are a lot of men that are like, but I want what you possess. And you're like, no, that's mine. Well, you're a witch, and I'm going to make sure you burn at the stake because you won't fuck me.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it now even.
Yeah. And it's come full circle. So there we are.
So yeah, as you guys were getting older, did your views of witches, both in media and kind of the perceptions of them, change over time?
Oh, moment of silence.
I know.
I think obviously, as you grow up, because there's the fun magic, and then you actually do realize that there is something. I think The Witch obviously is a great story about exactly what you just talked about. Yeah. And also understanding, were those powers given to her? Did she have those powers within her the whole time? And I think that's a great metaphor for kind of owning one's sexuality and independence and strength all at once is, are those things that are given to you or that you have to find, or are those things that are innately in your body and that you have access to and you just have to empower yourself and believe in yourself? And so, you know, these are subject matters that you get a little bit more intellectual about, where the sparkles and the fun elements are. And the magic is nice when you're younger, but you can, you know, there's a lot to witches. And the reason why people were burned at the stake, you know, is much more complex. And actually, people were killed over witches, yes, over witchcraft. I mean, that is a real thing that did happen. And I think
still happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in this world.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think that is something, the power of witches is very real. It's just a matter of your interpretation of them.
Completely. And it's fascinating that even throughout all the cultures, I mean, because every culture had kind of their version of the witch, they were always female, primarily. And some of them you would have magic men, but they were always different from the sinister, crone-ish female that it seems to be very pervasive. So.
And with the magic, in those situations where the magic men, you know, punished in the same kind of way.
Depending. It depends on the culture. I mean, like, there was always almost, and the same goes for zombies. Like, you see these same horror tropes throughout many, many, many different cultures. But pretty much anywhere you go in the world, they will have their version of a zombie, which is also very similar to a vampire when you break it down to, like, dead corpse feeding off live bodies. So you always see that, and then you always see some type of version of a sinister, crone-ish old woman who has powers.
But what is a wizard to a witch? And is it, because a wizard, by the way, isn't old, you know what I'm saying, is enlightened, is intelligent, is, you know, are all these other things. Isn't that the equivalent, the male
like
equivalent?
Like a magician, I think, is how the wizard gets sort of.
You get like the, like, when I think like of the Disney alchemist version of like Sorcerer's Stone, you know, like that, or like Mickey Mouse. Like, literally, that's like a magician kind
that's
of wizard.
That's a magic man, though.
Yeah, even think Sorcerer's Stone.
He's a magic man.
How the wizard in Sorcerer's Stone is portrayed as very intelligent and academic. But then if you look at Madame Mim,
yep,
she's cronish and old and hideous and evil.
Right.
And technically, they are in the same trade. They are colleagues and should be respectful of each other.
That is very interesting. And also the fact that a lot of time these women that are, you know, old and all the rest of these things can actually disguise themselves as young women. And it's a disguise. That's not really.
They're totally catfishing.
And that's not their true colors. And what does that actually say? I'm just putting that together. What does that actually say about people's perceptions of women who are actually strong and independent and all the rest of these things that just want to stay at home and like boil stuff in their own pot? Because that's kind of, you know.
Well, underneath it all, you're a crone.
Yeah.
You're the scary old, you know, mean lady underneath, hiding with these beautiful sort of
you're
exterior.
You're talking to me, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm talking to you. You know who you are.
So right around my college years, there were two witch films that I discovered really close together, and they kind of have similar tones, so I have to recommend them to the audience. The first one is George Romero's film, Season of the Witch. I mean, like, everyone has seen his whole zombie works and a whole bunch of his other stuff, but very few people have seen Season of the Witch because it's hard to classify as horror. And even when they were selling it marketing-wise, in some territories they released it under the title Jack's Wife because they wanted it to sound more like a marital melodrama.
Oh. So the women would come.
The women would come. Oh, it's about a
or
wife.
Not come, really, is what.
But well done. But the whole script, she's actually never given a name. She is only identified in the script as Jack's wife, which is, it's done as like a powerful statement on Romero's part. Like, this is totally like a feminist film, which is, you know, you see his zombie films and then you see this come out and you're like, oh, okay. But then you see, you know, they all have political statements to it. So this made sense. But the film actually opens with her being in a dog cage and her husband won't let her out. And then you realize it's a dream. And then the whole concept of the movie is it's the swinging 70s and her mm-hmm. husband's like, let's go to the swingers party. And I don't think it's an actual swingers party, but it's definitely like a, everybody just hang loose. We're going to have some beers and do fondue party. Because it's 70s, so I just assume there's fondue involved. And while there, she meets this other person who's really into witchcraft. And mm-hmm. so she starts dabbling in witchcraft. And then weird shit starts happening. And it keeps escalating and escalating. And the movie leaves it pretty ambiguous if she is actually becoming a witch or if she isn't. But she starts taking control of her sexual power. She starts becoming really free. She starts definitely kind of taking control of the household, overpowering the husband. And then it keeps escalating from there. So it's a really interesting movie because it does kind of raise the ambiguity of magic, but also it's you know, it's Romero. So kind of seeing this as part of his work is amazing. And there's another one called Night of the Eagle, which was kind of the same concept, but it was British, about a professor who was very academic and only believed in stuff in books that he could read. And his wife starts experimenting with magic and then weird shit starts happening. And then he gets really angry.
Is there a fire in there?
There is.
Okay, then I have seen it.
Yeah, it's like a classic,
It sounds familiar.
There is. And it's called Night of the Eagle, because there's a giant eagle on top of the academic building he works in. But both of them I loved because they were both about women finding themselves, finding their own sexuality, discovering who they want to be, taking control of their lives through witchcraft. Mm. So, yeah, they had some interesting notes to them. So what are some other films you guys would recommend?
I mean, The Witches of Eastwick.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
I write to the soundtrack from The Witches of Eastwick. It is so good. It just has such a, like, atmosphere to it. But I love that, the cherry scene, the accepting of this guy coming into town and all of them kind of, and then the tennis. But I mean, it's just a great, campy, fun, and the book is really good, too. It's very different, but it's very interesting. So I highly recommend read the book and then watch the movie.
And they made a TV show, too, or no?
They did, yeah.
For a hot minute?
For a hot minute.
Yeah.
That's cool. Have you guys seen the TV show Salem? We talked about that on Killer POV like 3 years ago. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I seriously loved that show.
Yeah, it was good.
It was largely from the perspective of the witches. And they were real witches doing like some sinister fucking shit. but you find out why they did that. Like they all have like crazy backstories of kind of what pushed them into witchcraft and how they ended up there. And then they're ultimately, it's kind of about them controlling the town, but they can't have the illusion that they're controlling the town. And it was fascinating. I think it went for 3 seasons.
That sounds about right. I know it didn't go too long.
But. Yeah, and it gets really Lovecraftian at points. So I highly recommend checking out Salem. I loved that show.
Yeah, I'm actually, I just started rewatching it because I left off like somewhere close to the end of season 1 and we just kind of, it like dropped off like for us. But I'm starting up again.
Keep pressing through because the second season gets really good.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
I really enjoyed it.
How many things are you watching?
A lot. Ryan's like, he's been gone for like 2.5 years.
Yeah, our listeners know because we haven't had him on in forever. He's been off in South Carolina.
He's in Haddonfield.
Yeah, shooting in Halloween. So, so you got lots of viewing
time.
I have so much free time. I was able to book you on Valentine's Day.
Yes.
So you're Netflixing and not chilling.
Yeah, I know. It's like chilling by myself in sweatpants. For real.
That's not bad though.
I'm over it at this point. But no, I have a lot of free time, so I'm watching like a ton of things all at once. Yeah.
Good. I like the idea that you're actually watching them all at once. Like there's like 4 different screens and you're like, yeah, I got this.
Watcher in the Woods is another good one.
Oh my gosh, I love that movie so much. Yeah. I don't think I've even seen it since I was like 12.
Yeah. That's one of those good like kid before you're a teenager. Which movies?
Disney went through this phase, and I guess it was about the late 70s, early 80s, where they released a couple of really fucking scary films, like back-to-back. They did The Black Hole, and Watcher in the Woods was part of it.
Escape from Witch Mountain.
Escape from Witch Mountain, yeah. And I remember Watcher in the Woods. I saw it way too young, and it, like, terrified me. The part where she writes the name backwards and is, like, talking to herself. It's, like, Red Rum grade, like, possession writing and reflection. And I remember that that one had a lot to do with reflections, and it was, again, children playing some type of, like, conjuring game, wasn't it?
I can't – it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I just remember that they're, like – I think it's Haley Mills, right? Is she
– I can't remember.
Or maybe it's not Haley Mills. Anyways, but it just has the – like, there's just this, like, woman in this black thing, this, like, cape, and she's wandering in the woods, and it's so freaky. But then it's, like, also, like, the positive side of it. Maybe what you perceive these women to be, they're not. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, too.
I remember that the setup of it was that a group of kids were playing this kind of conjuring game that I vaguely remember it being, like, Monkey in the Middle. And where it's like a group of kids standing around and somebody's in the middle blindfolded, and then she vanishes. And then this family moves into her house like years later and start getting
hints. Not Haley Mills. It's Betty Davis.
That's
my brain Haley Mills. It's Betty Davis.
Betty Davis, you're right, because she was definitely in her like baby Jane creepy years by then. but yeah, so this family moves into the house and this girl had disappeared there, and they start like getting messages from her. And so yeah, it was a really cool little witch movie I remember from my childhood. Did you guys watch The Worst Witch? That was definitely a huge one for me. Feruza Balk.
Feruza.
Hell yeah. That was and Tim Curry doing
she
like,
really cornered the market on witch.
Oh my gosh,
Canadian witches.
She was also in Return to Oz.
Yeah,
which has the witch Mombi.
That's right.
She took all the heads off
and like put her head. That was the scariest movie I'd ever seen when I saw it as a kid.
Completely.
It was so scary.
Yeah.
I'm still scared of the Wheelers. Still one of the scariest things ever.
Oh, mine was the giant stone king at the end that ate.
Fuck that thing, man. Yeah. So scary. So scary.
I was talking to somebody a couple days ago who asked me, they were like, oh, you're into horror. Have you ever seen Return to Oz? Yeah. And
and they all get turned into those like emerald things. They all get turned into like cups or something. And like, it's like, then they have to figure out which cup they are. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's awful.
The whole movie was just kind of a fever dream. And actually, I won't go into it on the show, but the story behind the making of Return to Oz and how that came to be is just like fucking bonkers. So you have to look that
up. I'll buy you coffee to get you to
talk to me. It's a crazy story. So but that one definitely hit me when I was a kid. Witches, when I was a kid, I absolutely loved them in any capacity. And so I'm hoping that they're making a comeback with kind of
little nose thing.
Oh, the nose, the bewitched.
The bewitched.
I used to watch
a lovable witch.
Yeah, she was a lovable witch. I like that show. Yeah.
But she's always causing chaos, and then her husband had to go and like fix it or something. And then her the plot of every episode.
Her mother would show up and do something silly, had the crazy sister, too. I remember watching Bewitched was on, if you were homesick from school, Bewitched was on right after I Love Lucy in the morning.
That's why I would always watch it. Yeah, those two were the perfect double feature.
Yep. And then you would go straight into Bewitched at like 10 to 11. They would show two episodes. And then I Dream of Jeannie. And then Price is Right came on. And by that time, I was hopefully feeling better.
This is sick days. Yes. And this is when you didn't, you know, you would like fake not, you know, because you'd really just want to stay home and watch TV. Yeah. Or is that just me?
What? Anybody? I want to know everybody's opinion about the Suspiria remake, speaking of which is coming back.
Yeah.
I am hopeful. I'll say that. I like some of the things going into it. I am hopeful that they will have kind of an understanding. But the witches in Suspiria were kind of a fever dream in themselves.
They weren't really there, right? I mean, that was the... I just think if they're making that, witches have to be having a comeback.
I feel like they have to dub it, though, if they're going to do it. All those Italian horror films.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about the 4K restoration.
Oh, no.
There's a remake coming, supposed to be this Halloween, although it's been kind of in the works for a couple of years now. Like, there was rumors of it last Halloween, and then it kept getting pushed.
It's scary. Whenever you remake something like that, it's just you hope that somebody either totally reimagines it because it's such a classic.
because it's so hard to – you want to pay homage and you want to be true to the source material, but it's very hard. And I find that oftentimes when you try to get too close to the source material, that is something like that that was of its era so much.
Yeah.
I don't – it's kind of dangerous. But – there's been a lot of remakes that I was like, don't ever do that. And I'm like, oh, actually, okay, you pulled it off. So yeah. It's like, you know, you just hope.
With Suspiria, I'm anxious to see what happens because we haven't seen any of those Italian horror films remade like this. And part of the charm of them, if you look at something like Beyond or Suspiria, is that kind of dreamscape where anything is possible. Nothing seems really real. The acting is off kilter. The plot is... Who
I
knows?
Think you need it to be in another language, too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure like, that it helps. Because I understood that.
Like, there's just something about those films that kind of becomes kismet, where there's just so many things that in any other film would be viewed as flaws, but when they all come together, it works brilliantly.
It's art.
Yeah, it totally is. And so, I mean, like, I would expect the production design to be just as good as it is in the original, if not better, because I can't picture Suspiria without it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you hope, but...
How did you guys feel about Love Witch?
I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it.
I really liked it. And if it is a modern witch film... Oh, I feel like you guys are going to scream. As a modern, like, witch film that is not set in modern and is made like a movie from 40 years ago, I thought it, like, achieved something that was, like, fascinating, especially... I don't, right now, especially since we're doing all these throwbacks and all these things that are so, like, so throwback. Sorry, there's, like, someone walking in the hallway, like, yelling.
We're hearing discussions outside the Blumhouse wall.
I just thought it was really interesting at a time, since we're doing so many throwbacks, we're doing so many remakes, to pull from that era and, like, make a new movie that looks like a throwback movie was, like, such a fascinating concept. I thought it was... fascinating and cool.
Yeah, as an experiment, I thought it was really cool the way that it looked, because it was usually, if people tell me that they're going to make a film and they're going to make it look like something from a prior era, I cringe and go, oh, wait, Grindhouse did that. and not well. And, you know, that it's, you can only wink at the audience for so long before they were like, we get it. You shot it like the 70s. We get it. But I actually enjoyed Love Witch when I saw it.
I had a hard time watching it.
Really?
Yeah.
I could see that, because I can see that becoming grating, but yeah.
Because it is a lot. It's very long, and you're watching this movie that feels exactly like a movie from that era. So it has these, like, slow, long things that you're not like, well, okay. But I don't know. I feel like she really achieved what she was going for, which is fascinating.
Yeah, it does move very slowly, and it's definitely like a visual feast, but only
if it was really beautiful to look at, but I had a hard time kind of keeping up with it. I was like, oh, I'm gonna go play.
Right. Yeah, it might be good for like a two viewing, like you watch half and then you go take a break and come back to it. It's a long movie.
Yeah. Bell Book and Candle is another really good one.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I've seen the play. I don't think I've seen the movie, though.
The movie's great. There's a young Jack Lemmon in it playing bongos.
What?
At the Zodiac Club, I think it's called. It's Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak and Elsa Lanchester. Elsa Lanchester's in it. There's a cat. Yeah, it's fantastic. It is.
Did you say there's a cat?
There's a cat.
Amazing.
There's a cat.
The sold.
Cat, yeah.
The Does cat it have a has, prominent role?
It does.
Does it speak?
No, but and it has a Piwacket, I think is the name of the cat. Piwacket.
The name sounds very.
Yeah. It's great. It has that weird like 50s, 60s sort of Manhattan vibe, and it's just it's a great witch movie.
Did you guys watch Bedknobs and Broomsticks
when you were a kid? Yeah.
I actually named my cat. The cat was what reminded me. I had a cat named Cosmic Creepers because that was the name of her cat in Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which was another like one of those like little edgy Disney films that came out. Disney doesn't do that anymore.
No, they do not.
No, but if you go back and watch those, that's why. Because you're like, whoa, Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Well, come back and watch Peter Pan.
I haven't watched Peter Pan. I don't even know if I've ever seen the whole movie.
You should go back.
It's problematic.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I'm sure.
There's a lot in there. You're like, oh, okay. Wow, Disney.
Have you guys seen the redux, I'll call it, of Worst Witch is now a TV show on Netflix?
I tried to watch it. I couldn't really.
The cool thing about it is if there's Game of Thrones fans here, the girl who plays Mildred Hubble in it is the girl who runs Bear Mountain on Game of Thrones.
Wow.
So she's like the little like preteen one who's like really ballsy and is like, we'll send 50 men. I love her. So she's Mildred Hubble in it. She's awesome. And then the woman who played Julia in Hellraiser is the headmistress in it. So the head witch of the school. So it's kind of some nice.
It's a witch school situation.
It's very much like Harry Potter for girls.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, it's, and this was based off a movie that came out in like 79, 80. I don't even remember. It was like a huge thing for me when I was a kid. But yeah, so they kind of took it and they turned it into a British TV show, which my daughter loves.
Amazing.
So
the special effects are a little funky.
Yeah.
The way it's shot, it looks weird. It looks like, oh, that's green screened.
It's just like very
just talking in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer.
Now, did you guys watch Teen Witch?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The songs. I could sing every one of them. So
speaking of talking cats.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. See, that's where you got the talking
cat. That's where
from.
I got it from. Mm-hmm. Where that cat.
What was the name of that cat?
I don't know, but he was like animatronic sometimes, and sometimes he was real.
Oh, that's Sabrina.
Oh, yeah, right.
Sabrina.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The teenage
I'm talking.
Witch.
I'm Salem.
His name was Salem.
Salem. Oh, you're right. Teen Witch is a movie where they sing Top That.
Yeah.
I got it.
I went with you. I was following.
Yeah, it's Sabrina, which they're remaking also.
Yep. They are.
It's actually Sabrina. It's based off the comics because the comics.
It looks like it's going to be really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Have you read the comics?
I have not yet.
It's in that Archie universe, right? Which I didn't realize it was in the Archie universe until people were talking about that it's going to be in the Riverdale world.
Mm-hmm. It works, the comics work the same way that Riverdale did, where Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like the original incantation of it, was really kind of cutesy and she was a kid and it was really funny.
It was a sitcom.
Yeah, it was a sitcom. And then the comics that came out a couple of years ago for Sabrina the Teenage Witch are dark.
Oh.
Yeah, like, I've read a few of them. They're really good.
Yeah, they're really good and it gets really heavy, really adult themes. It falls right in line with Riverdale.
It's the same showrunner, and I think the showrunner wrote the comics too, right?
Not sure.
Think so.
That's cool. Awesome.
I could be wrong, but I don't know.
I'm very excited. And one of the writers on the new Sabrina the Witch TV show is a good friend of mine. So
nice.
Hopefully we will have some more details on that. So yeah. So other witch films or media that we have missed that we should totally drop here.
You know, it keeps jumping into my mind just because of themes that we're talking about, but it's not a witch film. But I just have to say it, which is Thirst.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just, it's just another one where a female kind of embodies her own powers and has to figure it out, and she has this super strength, and I just thought that film was such a good representation of women finding their own empowerment and only to her own demise, but just such a great film. But vampires, sorry.
It kind of fits. I'll take it.
It kind of fits a little bit, right? It keeps jumping into my mind. I'm like, why are you in my mind? Just get out.
I'm going to drop a controversial title. Lords of Salem. What do you guys think?
I stopped watching Rob Zombie movies.
You're not the only one.
I didn't get that far.
Lords of Salem, out of the Rob Zombie movies, Lords of Salem was my favorite. But I still don't know if I like how it was portraying. I liked the witches in it, but I'm still not sure of the themes because it was still, I mean, it was definitely still about her kind of finding empowerment and, you know, finding a different part of herself. But at the same time, the witches were like, hideous. Like, it was an ugly, ugly version of witchcraft.
Is it set? I should know this, but I don't know anything about it. Is it set in the 1700s, or is it set now?
No, it's contemporary times. It's about a radio DJ who receives this CD. It's a record, I guess, for this band called the Lords of Salem, and they play it, and it's actually like witch chants, and it brings these witches back into current day, and they kind of start stalking her.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of cool.
So, yeah, it's got some interesting notes to it, which I highly recommend checking out.
I love this.
I'm writing it down right now.
Interesting.
Watch
the old getting the witch chant trope. The witch chant as a CD trope.
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to call the Four Corners?
No, we're going to call it Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary. So, well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. And we will be back next week. And I think Elric and Rob will be back and possibly even... No, Ryan will not be back by next week. Sierra has confirmed. We may be getting him back the week after, though. Yes. Okay, we have a confirmation on that. But Rob and Elric will be back with me next week. So thank you, ladies, so much for joining me on Valentine's Day to talk about witches.
Woo! Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Have a good week, guys.